It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. And, you know, it's great to be back in Phoenix. I was gone all the weekend and then last week at a conference, a Liberty Conference in Valley Forge in Pennsylvania, and met a lot of people, had a lot of interviews, had a good time. We'll get you some of the cuts. You know, the thing is that I'm encouraged in a lot of ways, and if you've been around long enough, you've seen the trend. You'll have people very respected in the Patriot Freedom community that have been doing this a long time and a long time and a long time of often the same thing. But there's something different that's happening. There's something that's going on that, you know, gives me hope, and I've been paying attention to it more than most. And I tell you what it is. It is an alternative way of looking at everything. So I'm going to go ahead, and today we're going to share with Pasha Roberts. He's director of Silver Circle. Now, this is an animated movie that has come out that is, it's an opportunity for people to be able to communicate ideas in another venue. I give you an example. When they started, a lot of times you had comic books. I mean, comic books were powerful enough that you got the United Nations paying Marvel Comics to come up with a comic book where Spider-Man and the other Marvel Universe are helping the United Nations with disease in the world and vaccines and United Nations good guys and so on. Why would they do that? Because it was effective. So you go, okay, well, what happens is now we're looking at a situation to where, what other kind of media did they have? Graphic novels. V for Vendetta, that was a graphic novel. You know, you have a lot of older books have been converted into graphic novels. Because a lot of times, I guess it's popular with some people to be able to have this picture that you have in your head planted there by the artist and the writer that wants to make sure you have the vision that they have, as opposed to you painting your own mental picture. A lot of times that's why you don't like movies, you know, it doesn't do justice to the book. Well, sometimes graphic artists that do graphic novels and so on, writers, they want to implant their idea, they want to give you the graphic. You know, the building is here, the bad guy stood like this. You know, his pectorals were this big. You know, this is the kind of information that they want to relay to you. Okay? You know, that's how they want to roll. So when we come back in, you know, this next segment, we're going to be talking to Pasha Roberts using another media. It's moving graphic novels. It's animation. It's computer animation. It's real high technology. And it is a way to communicate ideas and concepts to an entirely new generation that is visual this way. And it has an impact. I've seen it at several conferences and so on. And I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. You guys stay right there. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Pasha Roberts, director of Silver Circle.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, Monday through Friday here. Now, you know, I want to get to Pasha Roberts. I want to give you a little bit of background here and know who you're dealing with. You know, here's a gentleman that, you know, he found an animation studio, and where his clients mostly were was to make economic concepts visual. You know, it's graphing and 3D animations to kind of like, hey, man, you know, this is how to explain it to your audience. Well, then they started, you know, working on a webisode called Save Sonny, and it can be found at Reason.tv. The film reached over 2.5 million viewers on YouTube. Now, you know, Pasha holds a bachelor's degree in economics and Russian studies. We'll talk about that from the College of William and Mary, and a master's of science in financial engineering from MIT's Sloan School of Management. So you can see that, you know, the boy's got some skills, and he takes the skills of others around him, a lot of young people, and they have built this economic disaster film, Silver Circle. Well, we're going to find out what that means. So imagine, you know, it's an inflationary world in the future where you got free market rebels versus the Federal Reserve in the world of 2019. So it's kind of like V for Vendetta meets Murray Rothbard. Okay, so this is what we're going to be talking about and the impact this can have. We've been really looking forward to this. I got you there, Pasha.
Here. Glad to be here.
Pasha, go ahead, tell me everything. You know, let the audience know that the power, what you're hoping for and your intent of doing this film. You know, let's assume that, you know, you're going, yeah, I'll become a gazillionaire, you know, making this movie. Was that your goal?
No, it usually doesn't work out that way.
No, but, it does not. You're telling the truth.
There's always that tail chance. But, you know, the main thing is we had a really interesting story we wanted to tell. And, you know, that the kind of economic disaster that, you know, we talk about in our circles is pretty interesting stuff, and we don't hear people play it out all the way through, so we decided to play it through.
Well, this is, so you're saying, you know, one, is there going to be an economic disaster of some type? And a lot of people in the circles we run with are going, duh, okay, so they, but then you're taking it the next step, okay, then what?
Well, I mean, a lot of the people I talk to at the shows, I mean, you know, I talk about how we're creating economic disaster world with the Federal Reserve run amok, and everybody says, yeah, like now? And, you know, that's nothing like what we have in the movie for 2019. I mean, we have a much more militarized Federal Reserve. And one of the things we had them do, just to make it interesting, was, you know how in politics you always try to prevent last year's disaster. And we have them create an institution to prevent housing from ever going down again in price. So just like we pay farmers to not plant crops, we now have the Federal Reserve. I hope they don't get this idea, but we have the Federal Reserve creating these strategic housing reserves where they force people out of homes or just buy entire tracts and hold these tracts of land and empty houses and expanding contract that supply just to control the prices of houses.
Don't laugh, man. That's what all this bulldozing thing's about.
Exactly. I mean, they already own the CDOs. I mean, so it's definitely not a far stretch at all. FDIC owns a lot of houses now. So it's but you know, we've institutionalized that, and you know, that, but that's part of the you know, we have a strategic housing reserve just like there's a strategic energy reserve. And that's a big part of what the rebels are fighting in the movie. You know, there's a whole story wrapped up inside of that.
Why? You know, because there's people need a house, and they got the Federal Reserve keeping them out of houses and keeping the price up, that kind of thing?
Yeah, just not letting the market actually determine the price of houses. But from the Fed's point of view and, you know, from a political point of view in terms of officials getting elected, I mean, it's good politics. You're creating jobs. I mean, you're, you know, paying contractors to build empty houses over and over again, and and then the Fed cordons them off, and hey, you know, that provides jobs for people. It's like digging holes and filling them up.
You know, that reminds me of an old joke when I was in junior high. This is in the mid-late 70s. And the joke went like this. Yeah, I visited Russia, and there was these two guys on the side, you know, in the median. They were digging holes, and then the other guy was filling them back in. And you go, the heck are you doing? Oh, we plant trees. And they go, where are the trees? Well, Ivan was sick today, but we don't get off.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he was the guy that took the tree and put it in the hole. So, you know, if he's not there, they just, you know, dig the hole and fill it back in. You know, we pretend to work, they pretend to pay us. But this has started to come to America. All of the jokes, all of the rationalizations we have for free market capitalism, America, MK, America, you know, was all about how different we were from them. And now everything that we were making fun of in the former Soviet Union, we've become. And now you have this film that you're doing. I'd like to know who's behind it. How did it evolve into you're doing this? And what are you expecting the film to do? But let's go ahead and get back, you know, to the inception of the idea. You know, where did that come from?
Sure. I mean, basically, I've been an animation studio for a long time, and our main purpose, we started out, as you indicated, doing financial education, trying to get people to understand complicated financial concepts. And somewhere around 2007, the presidential debates came on, and I'm a long-time libertarian, and just the level of economic discourse was disgusting to hear. And we basically changed tracks over to focus much more extensively on economic education rather than financial education.
And the difference is what?
In financial, you're looking at how to do asset allocation or how to do investment or how to manage your individual assets. And then economics, you're looking at how the whole system operates and how people operate under constraints and operate under, you know, risk and, you know, government control. And it's a bigger picture. Most people in finance kind of take the Federal Reserve for granted. And, you know, if anything, they just care about whether the interest rate's going to go up or down. And that's, you know, they don't question
2007,
whether it's right or wrong or what's going on.
The 2008 presidential election cycle was the first time in my life that I remember that the Federal Reserve became an issue at all in anything. And before, it's so important, and it was at the base of everything, but they were able to keep it out of the limelight. They were like, oh, no, 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 pay no attention to the man behind the curtain pulling all the dials. And all of a sudden, it thrust forward, and you got young people across the country screaming, and the Fed. And I would go to these rallies, man, and it was just deafening. And
it's,
you know,
amazing. It's totally amazing. And, I mean, it's Ron Paul behind it, but it's definitely really an interesting phenomenon, and it's taken off since we started the movie, because we started this around 2008, right after Lehman went down, and everything's moving in our direction in terms of, the awareness of the Fed going way up, as well as, you know, the economy is going nowhere, which is, in a bad way, it's good for us, just because we get, the economy's not going to be any better by the time the movie's out next year, so...
Well, tell me this. You know, the movie has a message of what? And I mean, you know, is this, you know, once this gets out and it has a popular theme, all of a sudden, ooh, major motion picture Angelina Jolie, you know? So tell me what let's start off with the movie. And when we come back, we're going to hit a break here in just a little bit. But I want you to go ahead and start thinking about describing it to us, what kind of message it's going to have, and if it has any social benefit. I mean, we're gonna educate people, but what are we telling them? You know, what are we gonna have them learn, that they need to get chickens? I mean, so I'm, and why Rothbard? I mean, what is the message behind? You said V for Vendetta meets Murray Rothbard. You know, explain that real quick in a minute.
Sure. I mean, there's a, you know, obviously huge support for V for Vendetta inside of our circles, but it's The original book is even more interesting, and it's even more anarchistic than the than the movie, which is kind of this anti-neocon thing. But I encourage anybody who loves V for Vendetta, the movie, to go get the comic book and read it. But there's not a lot of social drive behind what drives V, except for just fighting tyranny. In our case, we're which is plenty, but in our case, we're actually focusing it on the Federal Reserve and focusing it on on central banking and how central banking and inflation hurts people. So if there's a message, it's really, is that central banking, what did Voltaire say? All paper money returns to its
intrinsic value. Yeah. Nothing. That's what we're going to find. When we come back in the next segment, we're going to find out what the story is. Silver Circle. Well, we're going to find out why they call it Silver Circle, too. Oh, it's going to be interesting. You guys stay right there. This is the future. This is the next generation, what they're thinking and why. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, did you guys miss me? All last week I was, going around and doing what for? I tell you, Pasha, this one thing I want to talk. We're talking with Pasha Roberts. He's the director of Silver Circle. And he's an economist, oriented kind of guy. His business had been making, financial graphics for, people, selling people into whatever. Let me tell you what's going to happen with your money. And we're going to graph it out. And we're going to make it look all pretty and everything. And after a while, you start to realize, this whole thing is just going to come down. You got that graph?
I do have that graph.
your clients, are you going, oh, by the way, here's the graph of, go buy gold? So that's a good question right there. Silver Circle. Why you call it Silver Circle?
The reason we call it Silver Circle is that one of the main ways that the rebels fight the Federal Reserve, aside from their various explosives and guns, is they make their own silver currency, and they're basically supplying an alternative currency to the people as a way to fight inflation. And we sort of show transactions taking place in silver, and we show how people that have saved silver are actually doing well and doing better inside of the economy than the people that are just holding onto their dollars and watching them disappear. Because if you watch what happened, we've been studying what happens under heavy inflation and hyperinflation, like Chile, Argentina, Zimbabwe, and it's just brutal what happens to people when they, their savings just disappear sometimes in the course of months. And the silver is a way that fight it, and that's the way that the rebels in our movie get their acceptance, is they're making their currency and putting it out there for people to use.
Okay, now, is that where the opposition comes from? Is that where the Federal Reserve is like, oh, no, you're not allowed to compete in our monopolistic economic little thing going on here?
Right, well, government hates competition, right? So, and actually in the movie, I think the Coin Act of 2016, which has yet to happen, but in the Coin Act of 2016, makes silver and gold currency illegal. Much like, gold was taken out of circulation and made illegal for citizens to hold. And was it 1934, I think that happened?
Yeah, 33,
34. Yeah, and until we went off of the gold standard. So it's basically, much like that, but it's a popular enough thing that the rebels, that we see people using it in the street and that kind of a thing. It's
I'm a new fan of junk silver now, pre-64 mm-hmm. coins.
Definitely interested in that myself. Yeah.
Well, it's, I'm surprised that it wasn't more popular. I tell you what happened. A good friend of mine says, Ernie, I don't know why you're buying all these, 1 ounces and all that kind of stuff, and you're paying $2 to $4 over spot. He goes, the silver content of these old coins is, I mean, they're worn a little bit, probably a little less silver than what they were originally, but, you know, they still got the knurled edges and they didn't shave it too much, you know, it's just wear.
It's still 90% silver, though. I mean,
it's 90% silver, but what happens is it is minted U.S. coins. Mm-hmm. And it's dimes, quarters, and half dollars, and it's the silver content of it, 90% of whatever the weight you got there, you know, 90% silver, 0.90. And I'm going, okay, so that's the melt value, you know, 90% times the weight, whatever. What am I paying over spot? Well, the fact that it's minted has value right there, but you usually only pay about 70 cents over the silver content of the coin, where you're paying 2, 3, 4 times that much, you know, in these other newly minted just bullion coins. And I'm going, why don't more people buy the junk silver? I don't know, but that's what I'm buying now.
Yeah, no, it's and it's much more divisible. So if, you know, if the stuff hits the fan, you know, you need the right amount of money to buy your cup of coffee. If you go into the coffee shop with a nice 1 ounce piece of gold, you're not going to be able to buy a cup of coffee.
You're not going to get any change back, you know.
Yeah, right.
You might get a kiss or something.
I won't give you change.
Yeah, your waitress might, you know, give you a kiss on the cheek. But, you know, the one thing is the, you know, so just so people understand, when you look at a dime, it's usually about 13.3 times the value. Right now, I mean, it changes, of course, you know, but it's 13.3 times the face value. So it's, you know, $1.35 for a dime. That's what it comes down to. So a half dollar, 13, what does that come to? Like, you know, $7, $6, $7, okay, for 150-cent piece, 1964, okay, old JFK thing. So you go, all right, you know, so this is how we start now doing it in our head. We take face value times 13, boom, that's the value of the coins in my pocket now, or the thousands of dollars you got in buckets laying around somewhere. And you just go to coin dealers and you get this stuff. Now, I'm interested in, you know, how they mint the coins and so on in your movie Silver Circle. Do they got their own brand, or, you know, how do they do that?
Yeah, and actually, just to follow up on your thing with the junk silver, there's a really interesting website called coinflation.com.
Yeah, coinflation.com has a conversion tables in there.
And yeah, they look at the current metal values, and they know how much metal's in the coins, and it's just a really nice reference for that kind of thing.
I use it all the time. When I go buy, I want to know how much I'm getting ripped off or what kind of
right.
deal I'm getting. You know, coinflation.com. Yes, that's a very good resource. Thank you, Pasha. We'll be right back with Pasha Roberts in just a little bit and talk about the apocalypse, economic disaster that's coming.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
You don't know how lucky you are, boys. Back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSR.
Oh, they got it better? Hey, are they on the way up and we're on the way down? Oh, my goodness. Is Russia, you know, dealing in precious metals and getting out of the Western civilization's paper money? You know, it's amazing how things change. You stay around long enough, you get to see it all. You know, and we have, you know, we're talking with Pasha Roberts. He's the director of Silver Circle. It's an animated movie that is, you know, you just know it's going to get a big budget contract. Anybody showed you any interest in that venue?
Not yet. I mean, we are basically, you know, the path forward really is to make as great a movie as we can, as efficiently and, you know, as we can. And, you know, and then you go for the distribution. So,
this is one thing. Let's go ahead and talk about the mechanics of this. This is one thing that has been of great interest to me and why, you know, you guys got my interest was because, is there a trailer? I mean, you go to SilverCircleMovie.com, and that's the entrance to everything that you're doing. It says that you have a release date of sometime this next spring in 2011, and I've seen a lot of the scenes from it and so on. Do you have trailers on the net somewhere?
I think currently on our website, we are linking to a fundraising video right now we're doing a program with Kickstarter.com to basically raise money for the actors. We're shooting with actors next week. We will be putting a couple of trailers out soon after, hopefully even this week, there's like a chase scene that we're having up there, and then there's a silver minting scene, since the rebels have their own silver minting and refining equipment. So we'll be showing some of that from the rebels' forge. But those are a couple of clips that are coming up, as well as the, you know, the fundraising one is the current one that's on there. You do see a bunch of the animation in there and some of the characters that we're playing with.
How much is your budget on this thing? I mean, how much money is this whole project taking? And then how long is the film?
Well, it's a feature-length film. It'll be 90 minutes long. We're actually trying to get it down to 90 minutes. So it's, you know, it's a huge amount of effort. It's the biggest thing we've ever done here as a studio, and we've been around for a while. And the full budget is microscopic by Hollywood standards. We're definitely outside of the Hollywood system. We're outside of unions and all that kind of thing. And it's I think the budget is like about $1.5 million right now, and which is a lot, but compared to any other type of animated or other movie, it's
you know, that's one of the things. That's one thing that I wanted to talk about and get on record here.
Yeah,
it is the mechanism, the technology that you use to produce this. That is very unique, also. You know,
it's very unique.
Tell us how you have been able to give a high quality movie I mean, I would say it's more than a cartoon. I mean, it's not like a cartoon. You got much more detail.
No, it's not a cartoon. In it, it's a 3D piece. It's more like, I don't know, Avatar or, you know, a Pixar kind of thing. It's not like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is it? You know, I'd hate to say, from what I've seen, you know, I haven't seen the 3D version of it. I mean, what is it, Toy Story 4? I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we use the same tools that all the major studios use. We use, you know, Maya and Nuke and all the, you know, Final Cut, all the different editing and compositing and 3D animation tools that we do. And we can actually output it in 3D also. That may or may not be advantageous. But there could be a tactical advantage to get into movie theaters with, you know, with 3D content on that.
That would be interesting. Now, tell us about the technology that you're using. Let me try and explain it for the audience from a layman's point of view, and you can correct me where I get wrong here. I'll do the 30-second thing. What they do is you'll take and put someone in the suits that have all these marking points. It's kind of like when you what was that movie, Beowulf or something? Beowulf, whatever it was, that classic tale Viking back in the whatever day. And it had Angelina Jolie would, you know, put on a skin tight, you know, baby suit, go around with all these little, you know, dot points on her, and then they would take and animate to that. Well, you kind of use the same kind of technique to where you have people in rooms manipulating different devices and doing things, so they take and there's enormous amount of work that goes to fill in the frames to have the movement and the animation go, and then of course a lot of software, and you take and you farm that out to India, Pakistan or something, a bunch of guys sitting there punching keys. I mean, how do you take all that information and get it in to produce the animation?
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to all that. I mean, we have our own green screen studio here. I mean, it's just, you know, some green paint and some, you know, some green rug on the floor, but it's our own little studio, and we have actors act things out, you know, and we capture their sound, we capture their movement, we capture their facial movement in particular, and as well as their body, and, you know, and there's basically this grid. It looks like the holodeck on, you know, on Star Trek or something, and basically this grid can exist. We can put anything there. It can be a train station. It can be a bar. It can be a restaurant. It can be, you know, the front of the Federal Reserve. And, you know, whatever they act out on the grid is, you know, we basically put them in that location.
Okay, whose imagination is doing this? And then you have, because I'm familiar with, you know, like doing any of our videos, the artwork that we do in our activism, the producing a radio show, making, you know, I understand the complexity and how many, the division of labor with so many people to make one thing kind of happen. And I tell you, you'll have somebody with the vision that has the idea, then the ability to communicate that with a graphic artist that has absolutely no vision, but has all kinds of skills. And then sometimes you have graphic artists that can fill in the stuff and add their vision to it and make it even better than what you had. You just needed a spark of inspiration or a direction to go. So tell me where your engine is, your power. Is there some, you know, 22 and a half year old graphic artist that's, you know, kicking ass on this thing? I mean, you know, tell me, where's the talent in this?
I mean, well, we've got a little studio. I'm kind of driving it. I am, you know, we came up with the original story, and we have a, you know, real LA screenwriter that that wrote it into the full screenplay. And I found one of the few free market screenwriters that are out there, and also somebody who lived through hyperinflation in Argentina. So that was a real find. But as far as the production side, I mean, really, there's just a few of us here, and we do sort of all the organizing, all the rendering, all the compositing, all the editing over here. Compositing is like putting layers together, like in Photoshop, but with video. And then a lot of the work also happens in India. We have a partner over in Mumbai, and you know, and they're actually creating jobs over there. I mean, for us over here, I mean, I wouldn't have hired a bunch of the people here if it weren't for the people over there. It's very cooperative.
No, you couldn't have afforded it. I mean, you know.
I couldn't afford it. No, there's no way.
So tell me, this is the question that I have. When you have a 3D rendering of a scene, you're going to do Apocalypse of the Future. Mm-hmm. Who's designing the background? I mean, you know, what, you got a newspaper stand there. You know, what headlines are on the newspapers? You know, what's the style of clothing? How detailed is the background? What's the sky looking like? You know, you got vehicles of the time. You got, you know, somebody has to direct this stuff, and somebody has to have the creative ability to create it. So I'm just,
you got reality is a bitch. You got to create it from the ground up. I mean, it's reality, if you look at it with an animator's eye, is very, very detailed, and, you know, down to the little dust and the, you know, the spider webs or whatever else is there. You got to kind of put it all together.
So it's going to be fairly detailed, especially if you go 3D. We're gonna go big production. So this is one of the. It could be the Blair Witch Project of animation. You know,
that's what we're going for. I mean, it's a story that, I mean, it's a really kick butt story, I guess, is to say, as far as a libertarian point of view. I mean, there's a strong sort of message inside of it, but it's not a it's not like a Michael Moore film where he just pounds the table the whole time through, it's just delivering some political thing to people. I mean, there's a real romance, there's a real investigation, there's a real story, and, you know, part of our story, I mean, I know you, Ernie, you talk about, you know, reaching the 15-year-old anarchist in their living room, and, you know, this is the kind of thing that we're doing. We're trying to make it a fun story that, you know, that kid and his friends can watch, and his friends will ask questions of him, and, you know, it's just an interesting story for people to enjoy. And, you know, by the way, we're fighting the Federal Reserve. So
tell me the message. You know, the story starts off with what? We have a, you know, and they're calling it the Silver Circle because they're making their own currency. They're ignoring the Fed, and you know, they don't like that none too much, I'm sure. So you're out defending what? You're wanting to take down the Fed, or you just want to try and be free of the Fed? You're trying to defend against them, or is it an assertive aggressive? You're under attack from them. I mean, what's the theme?
It is pretty aggressive in this sense. I mean, partially because I'm in a movie. If it's a good thriller romance movie, you need to personalize this stuff, and you need to, you know, give characters personal motives. If you made a movie just about actual politics, it'd be pretty boring. There are personal motives, and there are personal people fighting against people in the Federal Reserve. And I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but the rebels are, as I said, there's this housing reserve, and they're blowing up these empty houses that are in the reserve because they don't like that for personal and political reasons. And an investigator from the Fed goes out to track them down, and that leads into a whole tangled web of romance and intrigue.
When I come away from this as a experienced individual, and/or you know, a young person susceptible to this type of animated action film, kind of you know, against the man, you know, let's go get the man. When I get done watching this, how am I changed? What's my perspective? How's it been altered?
Well, for one thing, you've been introduced to a new bad guy. So there's not evil corporations in this, like most of Hollywood. It's we've cooked up, you know, this ultimate comic book bad guy, like this pseudo-government, pseudo-private bank that controls the world's currency in a secret, you know, secret society kind of a way. I mean, it's a perfect kind of bad guy if you think about it.
It's chaos.
And by the way, it's really there and reaching its 100th anniversary pretty soon. So it's so for one thing, you've been introduced to that, and you've been introduced to the prospect of what heavy inflation looks like and does to people. And it's, it should be, we're hoping it's a little bit of a wake-up call, because a lot of people in the U.S. have been fairly insulated from good side. And,
you
and I are probably old enough, we saw what we saw in the, in the 70s, but it's compared to what most countries have seen, that's pretty mild still.
You know, this is, it was interesting. I was coming back from Philadelphia late Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, arrived here at 8 p.m. I'm probably about an hour from landing. It's like a four-hour flight or something. And fortunately, I mean, the plane's almost full, and I got all three seats to myself. So I'm like, oh, score. I'm laying down, and I'm sleeping. And the only thing I remember is last hour or something, right? So I got a nice, relaxing thing. I get up. I go to the bathroom. I come back. And the guy sitting behind me was, he was dark complexion, and his accent, I couldn't really tell, where he was from, But he could have been Arabic. He could have been from Spain. I didn't ask. And he spoke good enough English. I couldn't really tell where it was from. And he goes, oh, I like your shirt. And on the back of the shirt, we have a polo shirt that we make, and it said Revolution logo. And it says, with our bouquet flower throwing, bandit guy. And it says, we know the truth, freedomsphoenix.com. And he recognized the Lovolution thing. And he just wanted, he came around and sat down, man. He wanted to talk for a whole hour plus, man. He just yammering away. And he's a dentist. And he was just so, America doesn't, he wanted to make sure I knew that America does not know what everybody else on the planet knows, is that we are being lied to by our media, that we are so full of crap our ears stink, that we don't know how we are perceived, what the truth, all kinds of stuff, and mainly economics. And he goes, did you know? And I'm like, look, man, libertarian, talk show host, okay, I get it.
As a matter of fact, I do not.
Matter of fact, let me tell you a couple extra goodies, And then the guy sitting in front of us, they're kind of, you can tell they're leaning back, and they're getting some. So you amp the volume up about 10%, make sure they can, make it out, And I'm starting to see that what has been the biggest cloak for the big bad guys is just ignorance. They have done everything they can to make sure that we don't know squat. In just the last couple of years, all of a sudden they're outed and they don't know what to do except keep doing what they're doing, more bailouts, more stimulus, more. And it's like they're feeding on this carcass, and they know it's going down. It's just how much they can transfer and obligate the next generation they think they can get away with. Well, your film, Silver Circle, comes out. It could be the beginning of an entirely new generation of even the young people. It'd be copied and passed out and redistributed and pirated and whatever across the planet, and could change the entire ball game. Now, is it?
That's what we're going for. And we're going to these places that are not traditional political outlets. I mean, we're very popular on the comic book circuit. We go to a lot of comic book shows. Very character, very story-oriented people. They love our characters. They love the story. Everybody in comic book land wants to fight against the man and be a
A
superhero, and and those things are huge. I mean, Ernie, you go to the libertarian shows and they're 700 people there or something like that, or the big one, 1,100 people, you know, there's tens of thousands of people. I mean, at the Boston Comic Con, there was 1,000 people waiting in line in the cold in skimpy outfits waiting to get in.
You know, we got the Freedom Summit coming up. You know, we need to try and make sure you guys get out to that. It's not, we try and keep it intimate. We're trying to keep it under 200 people, you know, so that you have the interaction with the guests. But it's the quality of the people. It's the people behind the Lovolution. It's the ones that, you know, kind of make sure things do happen and understand. We're going to understand some more when we come back on Declare Your Independence with Pasha Roberts, director of Silver Circle.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what's that mission here in the clear? You're independent of me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, I don't know, promoting some freedom. And, you know, who's going to help me do that? Well, Pasha Roberts from SilverCircleMovie.com. SilverCircleMovie.com. It's going to hit. It's going to hit hard. I guarantee it because I'm going to make sure because that's what I do. And, you know, you guys get a heads up on this thing. Well, a lot of people already know. Certainly a lot of people in the freedom community. And I'm going to give you an example. All the Lovolutionaries. You know, Ron Paul thing's going to start hitting again in 11. You know, think about it. It's spring. You have, this is when the Ron Paul Revolution started before. It was January of 07, which it's equivalent going into the 12 presidential campaign will be January coming up. If there is something to be done, whether it's him or not, it doesn't even matter. You're still voting. I mean, you know, but that's not the point. The point is an understanding of an entire generation. What has been learned? How large has the market gotten of people that not only understand it, but I mean, in addition to that, people that even know that the issue even exists, that want to understand it. And I'm telling you, you start a movement like this, you get to where you really make the money. Merchandising. So you guys are going to be merchandising Silver Circle Movie too, I would imagine. I'm seeing all kinds of graphics or, you know, jewelry and books and all kinds. I mean, you guys are going to
rake. Who knows? But yeah, it's just amazing what's happened over the last, just the last few years, right? I mean, it's just, you know, nobody would have predicted it. I mean, you know, Brian Doherty wrote, you know, Radicals for Capitalism, you know, and he tried to capture the whole libertarian movement, and he completely missed the whole Ron Paul and all the young adults coming in. It's completely off the hook. We're very psyched about it.
Well, tell me, you know, when you first started, when was the first conference you went? I think the first time I saw you was at the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire. You know, how many conferences had you gone to before that?
I can't count. I think our first one for this movie was at Freedom Fest in 2009. And at that point, we were using the working title called Schumpeter's Gale, which is a very economics geeky reference to Joseph Schumpeter, who's an Austrian economist. But most libertarians don't even know that. So that was way too obscure. And that's before we really got really involved in silver. So. And as we kept going, it got more and more clear, and we got more and more involved with the silver community in the process. And you know, I love the silver guys. It's pretty. There's a lot of really interesting folks there, and been through mints, been through refineries, and.
Well, I can see the graphics that you have, some of the screenshots of like their silver production and minting facility here. And, you know, it's kind of this, you know, you got the detail of the rusting and the switches and the dials and the floor and the walls. And, you know, I mean, it's just enormous amount of work that goes into this. You know, there's a potential for. See, my point is that, of course, this should go viral, and I'm sure on the internet it will. You know, there's no doubt in my mind this is going to be huge. People are going to be walking around with silver circle belt buckles for the rest of their life. I get it, you know. but the thing is that will the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, the mainstream, the talking heads on, the movie theaters? Are they going to allow this thing to get wide distribution?
It's going to come out very intentionally right in the middle of the hype of the election season. I mean, it's just, you know, the presidential election. It's you know, so a lot of this stuff is going to be off. It's going to be on. And, you know, so I think there's a very strong chance that we'll be provocative enough and interesting enough and good enough that
can they stop it? No! And we're going to make sure. We'll be right back.